Hello and welcome to the American Magazine podcast for the week of February 27th. This is our annual, our fifth annual Oscar podcast with Father Jim Martin and Bill McGarvey.
5 years. Wow. 5 years.
Yes.
Can't believe it.
Welcome to you both. And we're going to get right to it because we have 9 movies to talk about. We thought maybe we'd get off and only have like 5 this year because they've changed the rules for the right number of nominees, but they decided to make us work for this. So
we'll be ever getting any royalties from these podcasts ever?
More movies for us not to see.
So we've only seen one of them, so this will be pretty fun. We've actually seen a few of these.
No.
Let's start with The Artist, which is, I think, the leading contender right now for Best Picture. Bill has seen that. I've seen this. Bill, why don't you start off on your...
This year's, and I'm going to talk about this on a couple different movies. Those of you who've listened to the past 5 years understand that I have the best batting average in terms of success, et cetera. And Father Jim's looking at me like...
Because you've seen the movies.
Shut up. Yeah. In all seriousness, there are a couple movies this year that are about people that love movies. Hugo is one and The Artist is the other. And I think The Artist will be a very strong contender simply because it is a good movie and it is the Academy voting about a movie for people that really love the imagination and the beauty of movies. I thought it was a really wonderful movie. It was definitely hearkening back to a different time. It was clever. I wouldn't personally vote it for my favorite of the year, but it's a really wonderful movie that I think a lot of people will love, and it's just a breath of fresh air in the sort of general Oscar kind of firmament. So I liked it a lot. I think it might very well be considered for Best Picture, along with potentially Hugo, although Martin Scorsese has already won. So The Artist is sort of maybe, I don't know if it's a dark horse is the right word, but it's certainly a really well-done movie by people that love movies, and the Academy Awards are all about people that love movies, so I can see it winning.
What did you think, Tim?
I enjoyed it. I mean, it was one of these movies, I think if I had seen it when it first came out, and I think I would have been charmed more by it. I think the fact that it was kind of a little bit later in the game, I had some pretty high expectations. I don't know, there were certain parts of it that I was disappointed in. I mean, it's charming. He's great. I think she's really good, the woman who plays his kind of love interest. But, you know, there's some elements of it. There's something I'd like to talk about the ending of the film.
Feel free.
I don't think we should. I don't think it's the strongest Best Picture. If it did win, I don't think it'd be one of the better ones.
Is there any speaking in it, or is it completely silent?
There's some speaking.
A little
in
bit,
it.
Yeah. Very little.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, there's a novelty to it, but there's a moment where the main character speaks at the end, and I was a little unsure of why this is a character who's in silent movies, they make the transition to the talkies, and he can't make the transition, either because he doesn't want to or he can't. It's kind of unclear.
Is that clear to you? Singing in the Rain.
No.
Remember that? Like Lena Lamont in Singing in the Rain. Is it because he has a bad voice or just doesn't want to?
It's a little unclear. I mean, they give one reason, I think, at the end, but it's not satisfying.
I think he believes he's the great artist, like a Chaplin-esque kind of artist that can do all this stuff. He's a huge star. And he thinks this is, you know, you can go have all the words you want. We just need images. We need action and move. And so there's a bit of that. I mean, when there's sound, there is some sound in the movie, obviously beyond just the score, but he uses it well. I kind of agree with what Tim is saying, that I wasn't overwhelmed by it. I thought it was a really good movie, and I think a lot of people would really like it. The main character, I forget the French actor's name off the top of my head.
Jean Dujardin, I think.
Sorry, Jean Dujardin.
Good job.
Merci.
He actually, it's funny because he looks like somebody from 1928, 1930. It's really
the mustache helps.
Really. Yeah, the mustache and the whole the smile and... Even more so than the woman who's also wonderful in it, who I believe is the wife of the director.
Director, yes.
But anyway, it's a great movie. It might win because, again, I'm sure it's a very strong contender for winning because it's about films.
Now, you mentioned Hugo, Bill. Why don't we talk briefly about that? Is it too much? I mean, I love Martin Scorsese. I haven't seen this movie, but is it too much of kind of the movie worship that he's so known for?
Is it too much? Look, visually, it's for him. It's 3D. It's a different cartoonish. It's not cartoonish. It's a children's like tale. It's not really a children's movie at all. I would say the movie gets really good on the second half. I really found it when it gets more into the Ben Kingsley character and about film, it becomes a really compelling story. Before that, I have to admit, you usually don't hear this about movies with kids in it. The main character, the Hugo character, the actor, or whatever, just didn't hold my attention in the same way that other child or certain characters would, you know. But it's a beautiful movie, beautifully shot. And again, it's sort of a period piece like the artist, and it, in that sense, I think it might really attract attention. I think Scorsese's done better work, but I think it's great that he made this movie about loving movies, and it's very different from what he's done in the past.
Now, Moneyball, it's a more accessible subject, baseball, but I guess this was very hard to get on screen for a long time because this whole kind of Bill James statistic-driven approach to baseball from the book, from the Michael Lewis book, was hard to translate, but they did a very good job.
How the heck is that nominated for Best Picture? I mean, I think that's crazy.
Really? Well, I don't know. It's an interesting story. Interestingly, Brad Pitt was on NPR saying that they went through three directors. One of them was Steven Soderbergh, who Brad Pitt worked with in Ocean's 11 and stuff like that. I think that, it's a strange thing to, as you were saying, dramatize. But I thought they did a great job. I thought he was interesting. I mean, it's compelling without having a whole lot of baseball action. It's not a lot about, what happens in the games. In fact, when the games are going on, you basically see, which I thought was kind of clever, just statistics kind of being thrown on the screen. And in fact, Brad Pitt's character, Billy Bean, can't even be in the stadium when the games are on because he gets so nervous. But he was terrific. I mean, he carried the whole movie. I still, we'll talk about The Descendants, but I still felt like I was watching Brad Pitt,
Right.
I mean, I felt that less in The Tree of Life, but I felt like I was watching, Brad Pitt, as the general manager. I never forgot that it was him. Whereas in Tree of Life, I actually started to forget it was Brad Pitt. That's made him look a little different.
That's true. I guess I saw it later, and again, I read a lot of good press about his acting, and I was expecting a little bit more kind of the quick repartee.
Yeah.
I think the early reviews were saying, it almost had like a screwball comedy feel to it, but I didn't get that at all.
I mean, it's not that I thought the movie was, let me be clear, it's not that I thought the movie was terrible at all. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the movie. The notion is up for Best Picture.
Wow, that's kinda, that nine.
Because there's but I think I could probably easily pick a bunch of movies ahead of that. It was a decent movie, and I think you make a great point, Jim, about the fact that that they make a pretty esoteric subject, the mm-hmm. sort of statistical sort of approach to baseball into an interesting story and a human story. But I was just saying that it's just, as much as I thought it was a good movie, the notion that it's up for Best Picture is blows my mind.
There was another thing that said that they were using in that one scene where they have the baseball scouts sitting around the table talking about people. Those are real scouts using
real, I could tell.
Yeah, also using real kind of examples of things that they've heard said, like kind of silly things they've heard said, like, oh, that guy looks good. He looks like a good ball player.
Right. Or the whole thing about, like, he has no confidence because he has an ugly girlfriend.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
That's
right,
pretty funny.
There were some great lines in it. Yeah. No, it was really well done. And Brad Pitt does a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we talked about this before. Jonah Hill, I don't know why he was
nominated. I do not understand that at all. I think Jonah Hill's funny, but, I mean, he plays Jonah Hill. It's like he walked right out of...
He just stares blankly at Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that is kind of amazing. He's not. I mean, he's a good actor, but the notion is up for Best Supporting Actor for that is again, mystifying.
Now, Midnight in Paris. I like Midnight in Paris. I mean, another movie that, just because of my lifestyle these days, I saw it much later, but I liked it. I was taken by it.
You mean your lifestyle of going back into the past?
Yeah, exactly.
flying to Paris. I was surprised how much I liked it, too. And, it was this big surprise hit for Woody Allen. There was that documentary on PBS about Woody Allen where he said that he never knows what's going to hit and what's not. And the end of the documentary is Midnight in Paris doing so well. I found it very charming. I thought it was fun for me to see all the characters. I mean, I thought, well, I can't wait to see, Kathy Bates as Gertrude Stein. And I thought,
Hemingway.
What's his name? Who played Dali? Who was very funny.
Adrian Brody?
Dali. I am Dali.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, I think as somebody who likes writers and books and literature, it's fun to see these people on screen. And he does it in a way that, I mean, it does harken back to some early Woody Allen that was more fantastical, where he would meet with, these characters. Yeah, exactly. Kind of like characters from fiction. And was it Madame Bovary at one point? It's a character in one of his stories. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, I don't know, it reminded me of kind of a young, youthful Woody Allen, which was nice.
Yeah.
Because so many of his films kind of seem just overdone at this point.
Well, it's like that famous line, I liked your earlier, funnier movies. That's in Stardust Memories. Right. Did you see it, Bill?
I loved it. I mean, I liked it a lot. I should say, I really, really liked it a lot. Yes, I did. I think a couple things about it. I think Woody Allen has realized that one of the reasons I think it really works is that Owen Wilson plays Woody Allen in a very different way than Woody Allen plays Woody Allen. So, if Woody Allen, you could sort of see when you see the movie, you could try to place Woody into those lines and see him giving them, and it would make sense given what you've seen Woody do for decades now. Owen Wilson gives it a completely different spin.
Well, he whines, but it's not as annoying.
It's not as annoying. You haven't heard it a million times. It's him coming out. So there's a charm to it that you don't usually have. And honestly, it's going to sound silly, I say this, but honestly, the movie poster is great. And I know friends who work in Hollywood, and it's a great poster. That
it's
kind
perfect
of puts
poster.
It puts it right into a great it completely encapsulates what the movie is. And then it just becomes this really fun ride.
And also the point, frankly, that we always think that the previous generation was more interesting. I mean, the fact that I love that she, you know, he goes back in the 20s and she wants to go to the Belle Epoque.
Right.
And I thought that's like a very interesting point about, you know, what is the golden age? And,
I agree.
You know.
No, I loved it. I thought it was a really good movie. Really good movie. And it's tough. And I think it is really tough for people to like Woody Allen. I saw the documentary, as great as it is. I think it's very difficult to get past some of Woody's problems, not to be his judge and jury, but... it definitely, you know, sort of colors your impression of this great artist. I think he's a great artist in many ways, and he's done amazing work. But that said, I think he's really hit one out of the park with this one. Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody's talked about The Artist and The Descendants as being kind of, you know, 1-2 in terms of the likelihood that they would win. I guess, is there any chance that Midnight in Paris could kind of be the dark horse here and pull it out?
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of that depends on politics. I mean, how much do people like Woody Allen? I think people might have felt, I mean, I don't know. What do I know about the industry? But maybe people feel he's been rewarded enough.
Right, right.
I think Alexander Payne's kind of an up-and-comer. If we talk about The Descendants,
why don't we go ahead?
Very surprised at how much I liked it. I thought George Clooney was spectacular. And as I said, it's the first time I've seen him play not George Clooney, not this kind of suave Ocean's 11. Even in his other parts, he always felt like George Clooney to me. It was very affecting. I found it very moving at the end. I won't give it away, but there's some really affecting scenes. The kids are great. It's beautiful. Alexander Payne, who did Sideways, and also one of my favorite short little clips in Paris Je T'aime, the 14th arrondissement, which you can get on the YouTube, is beautiful. Jesuit educated, by the way, at Creighton Prep. I really found it fascinating. And also a new story. You know, I mean, it's in Hawaii. You don't see too many sort of serious dramas in Hawaii. It's a family drama. It's not clean. It's not predictable. I found it really rich.
There was a good discussion. I reviewed this for America, and there was a good discussion of it in response to my review. A few people weighed in, and somebody pointed out they thought this was kind of like a secular parable, like that there's it has some really important lessons. There's no mention of God or faith or spirituality or anything, but there are some, nonetheless, lessons that it tries to impart in a very kind of subtle way about the importance of family being one. And also just kind of connection and the whole question of God. I mean, I mentioned, like, for example, there are scenes near the end where you might expect them to talk, like somebody who's near death, you might expect them to talk about God, but they didn't at all. Did that feel false to you, or it sort of felt natural to the characters?
You know, and that's their world, and that's where a lot of people are. And when I talk to people who are struggling with that, sometimes it just doesn't come up.
Yeah.
And if they're living in a completely secular family, then that wouldn't come up. But I think you're right. I mean, a lot of the whole question of forgiveness, I thought, was and reconciliation and connection, you're right. But in its way, it was a very profoundly spiritual movie. What did you think, Bill?
I liked it. I mean, George Clooney is forever one of these people for me that I have to admit, part of me is like, I don't want to like George Clooney, you know, because he is sort of so suave in so many levels. And yet I think he makes great choices often for his films he made. I mean, the fact, I think he won me over, especially when I saw Good Night and Good Luck.
Mm-hmm.
He directed that. I thought it was a smart movie. It was a great story. He also played a side role in that. I'm sure he helped him get the movie made, but also... I thought it showed a level of humility that he doesn't have to have because he's George Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's great. I do think so sometimes, like you said earlier about Brad Pitt, I still felt like I was watching George Clooney, and that's because he's such an iconic guy. I like the movie, but I feel this much the same way about The Descendants as I felt about Sideways. I loved About Schmidt, which was Alexander Payne's movie.
George Nicholson. That was great.
Very good movie. Great movie. Powerful, almost like a parable in a certain way. I like Sideways as well, but I felt it was kind of slight. I felt it was...
This seemed more substantial than anything he's done before.
Yeah, although it's interesting. It's funny how all these movies are about, in a sense, like men in crisis.
Right.
See, I don't have crisis. That's the
Yeah, well, lucky you. but I mean, you know, I mean, Sideways, it's about a guy who's, you know, both of them are kind of in crisis. About Schmidt, clearly, you know, he's at the end of his rope. And, you know, George Clooney is like having the worst week of his life.
But he handles it better than some of those other characters do. He has this kind of... equanimity about him that is quite surprising. That you think the normal reaction would be just lash out, and you'd totally understand, but he doesn't.
And there's also this scene, which, without giving something away, was kind of a surprise. He stands up to his whole family about something. He makes this very unpopular decision, and I thought, boy, it was well acted, and it was unexpected, and it was kind of shocking. You're right. You got a sense that that character could do that, you know, because he has that moral core.
And there's a good scene there, because you get the sense the people were upset, and they said, you know, we're going to take you to court on this. But they also, Beau Bridges, who's great.
He is great.
Says, well, you know, cousin Matt has something to tell us, which means that he's just saying he's still our cousin. You know, you may be angry at this decision, but he's still part of the family.
That's very true. Now, you make a great point, and I hate to be like, I liked it, I didn't love it. I thought it was a good movie, but I really felt that Sideways was getting all this attention, which I liked. It's a small movie. It that was about wine. I mean, at one level, it was about wine. It was about much more than that. But I do think Alexander Payne is very talented.
He is.
I'll go see his movies, and I liked it a lot. I guess I'm often feeling like when I see somebody like P.T. Anderson's movies, where I feel like there's a similar kind of character kind of development or character, where that's not that small, because clearly There Will Be Blood was a huge movie and epic, but I guess I just feel they're kind of slight sometimes.
Even The Descendants?
Because
he's dealing with the really heavy stuff.
It is a very heavy topic.
It's not giving anything away to say that he's dealing with his wife who's in a coma.
Who's in a coma, right. No, and it's, I guess I just, again, I liked it. I didn't feel it was tremendously special. I thought it was a good story, and I think you make a great point about the family, and I'd forgotten that moment, and Beau Bridges being really great in the movie as well. And so those movies, when you mention that again, Tim, it makes me smile. It's like, yeah, that was a great little moment. It didn't stick with me in the same way that even, you know, Midnight in Paris did. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, again, it's a good movie, and he's a smart filmmaker.
And, Jim, what you bring about the spiritual element is interesting, because you wonder in this day and age, making a movie in Hollywood, somebody like him, if it had been more explicit about some of these things, about redemption and forgiveness and faith, whether or not people would be as receptive to it.
Well, and you know, this little thing, which I really encourage people to go see in Paris, Je T'aime, or Je T'aime Paris, or whatever it is, it's his scene, the 14th arrondissement, and it's a woman basically sitting on a bench, and she has this kind of epiphany, and it's very spiritual, and it's all about awareness. She never says God, you know, and you could easily, you know, to your point, kind of cross that line, and on the one hand, it would make it more explicit. On the other hand, I wonder if it would make it as inviting to people.
Right,
you know?
Especially non-believers non-Christians. Mm-hmm. The Help. I have not read this. I've not watched this. I've not read the book. It seems to get a lot of hype. Is it worth it?
I went with my parents.
It seems like a go to your, with your parents type
and,
movie.
And I was really happy I went, and I was fascinated by. It's an easy movie to parody, and I know people have made some parodies of it. But when I went, it was a fascinating crowd that went. It was a very diverse crowd. It was a lot of African American families that were there. That was really interesting. Older folks, people in their 60s and 70s, who generationally would have maybe seen some of these things. And in that sense, it was really well done. I think the movie really, you know, captured a little bit of a moment. I think you can make arguments that some of it's very cloying and very can be a bit much. That said, I mean, the fact that within 50 or 60 years there were places in the United States where people, to bring that reality home, that there were people could not use the same bathrooms, et cetera, and the dramatization of that I thought was interesting, and I thought it was a well done movie. Yeah, I don't think it'll be win for Best Picture, although
it may. I mean,
you think?
Well, I mean, it's I think people across the country really liked it. I think there's a lot of sympathy for it. You know, I think it tackles a very important social question in a popular way, which I think is, you know, helpful for people.
Right.
I found it very glossy.
Yeah.
I found the look of it kind of distracted me from the movie. It's extremely, you know, sort of high production values. Everything's bright and shiny, and you know, even in the sort of poverty-stricken areas.
Right.
I thought the story was a bit contrived, and you know, the critique of, you know, it's the white woman helping the black woman, you know, realize who they are. But you know, that being said, I thought, you know, Viola Davis was fantastic. She was just fantastic, and she, Jessica Chastain, who I love, who plays this you know, difficult character, and who else is in it? Bryce Dallas Howard is in it. You know, she plays a tough character too. But let me tell you, Viola Davis, I just thought, you know, she had such gravity and such had such pathos to the character that for me she was the whole movie, and I thought, now here's someone who I'm completely invested in it. And she seemed completely real to me, even in a movie that seemed, as good as the acting was, it's not like anyone's a bad actor. The movie just seemed very overly produced. It really felt like you were watching a movie, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Whereas in, you know, in The Descendants, I don't get that. There's not that feeling. It is very understated.
Do you mean you feel like there's a certain formula? In terms of, like,
no, I think just the look. I just think the lighting, okay. The colors, the palette that they pick, the costumes. I mean, it's very glossy.
It's a The Descendants, piece. Yeah, yeah.
The Descendants is not. But Viola Davis was just, I thought she was spectacular.
And we all know her from her work in Doubt both on the stage and in the movie. She was magnificent in that. Yeah.
I mean, I think you can make the argument that you could feel a little manipulated at the end of some of it, but that all said, and I'm sure some of the criticisms have been about sentimentality for it, and there could be that, but that said, I think it does touch your heart on some level, and it moves you, and I think Viola Davis did a great job. I thought Jessica Chastain and Bryce Dallas Howard did a great job. I think, you know, did you have some problems with the Best Supporting Actress?
I thought Octavia Spencer, I thought she was good. I didn't think Best Supporting Actress. I think that one of the problems with that with her character is, I mean, there's a device that she takes revenge on one of her former bosses, and you know, it's sort of this kind of shocking moment. They and I've heard this in interviews, they refer to it like three or four times, you know, this sort of shocking thing, and she keeps bringing it up, and I thought that kind of diminished the character. I thought that she, you know, unfortunately, she's supposed to be kind of like the sassy best friend, you know,
and it's a little out of central casting.
Well, a little bit, and I just thought that they didn't need to do that. They could have had two, you know, in a sense, well-rounded characters. Like I said, I just, for me, Viola Davis was this movie.
Another movie that's kind of been criticized for some of its sentimentality, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close. Bill, I think you're the only one who's seen this.
Didn't like it.
Did not like it. No. Why?
I honestly did not. I didn't read the book. It's a Jonathan Safran Foer book. I didn't. The main character, Maximum Sydow has a great role. Mm-hmm. And a great. He does a great job with it. I think it's probably written really well as well. I didn't ultimately the main, and this is really tough. It's now two for two in terms of child actors that I did not particularly come to care about the character.
Well, I heard he's a kind of odd.
He's
oddball,
hard to like.
Right?
Yeah. He's hard, which is, you know, the point. I'm
does
sure.
He, is does he have a sort of a developmental?
He's strange. I don't know if he would necessarily have it. He would certainly be at least socially awkward, mm-hmm. which is, you know, that's the character. Mm-hmm. And there is some beautiful moments to it, but ultimately, you know, having, you know, we all of us, I think, were here for 9/11 and some of the aftermath, and it's clear it's a clever take on a way of talking about that event in a very personal, you know, human terms and scale. But yeah, I just did not feel.
Did you see it in New York, by the way?
I did, yeah.
Because I have some friends who saw it in New York, and they said that the theater was just, you know, awash in tears by the end.
Oh, okay.
Was that your experience?
No, not at all. Actually,
mm.
I went to an early screening of it, mm. and just, you know, it's not that it was horrible filmmaking. Mm-hmm. I just did not feel. It didn't really make much of an impact on me.
Wow.
But I mean, I will say for the fact that it did talk about such an event that is so burned into our memories, mm-hmm. in a way that we wouldn't think of it usually. So in that sense, it was well done. But no, I did not love it, and I haven't told anybody that they should go see it, to mm-hmm. be honest with you. Mm.
Now, Tree of Life is a movie that, Father Jim, you've talked about on the podcast before, but maybe you can...
You have?
Yes, in an earlier editor's podcast.
That's not cool. I want to break new ground with this.
Well,
remind our listeners why you loved it.
I felt that it was extremely prayerful and too impressionistic for a lot of people, but I thought that the depiction of kind of the spiritual life through the development of, you know, throughout childhood and adolescence and adulthood was just beautifully done. I think visually it was stunning, basically. I think Terrence Malick is one of my favorite directors. I love The New World. I love Thin Red Line. I loved Badland. I mean, I really like everything he does. And I found it very prayerful. You know, I think it could have used some editing. It's a little long. You know, I might have, you know, compressed some of the creation of the world scenes. But there's this bravura scene where it's basically sort of looking at life through the eyes of a child, where they're kind of just, you know, they're running through the field and they're dancing and they're playing with fireflies, and it's stunning, and you somehow get this idea of yourself almost transported back into childhood. So I found it really beautiful. I thought Brad Pitt was great. He is not Brad Pitt in this. Jessica Chastain says almost nothing, and she's great. And then the Brad Pitt character, without giving too much away, is at the beginning seems like this kind of ogre, but he's revealed as quite complex. It wasn't perfect. Like I said, it was a little long. To me, it felt a little self-indulgent, but just beautiful. I recommended it to tons of people. I thought that and Of Gods and Men were the two big religious movies, and so did our reviewer, John Anderson, for last year.
Well, we were talking earlier about, you know, ambitious filmmaking. Mm. The Descendants, where perhaps he's trying to sneak some of these messages in a little more understated way. Here's someone who's not afraid to get up.
The meaning of life.
Just shout it out from the rooftops. And it takes a certain, confidence as a filmmaker to do that. So you got to admire it to a certain extent.
Quite frankly, there's nothing in the league of this film to me. I mean, I know.
Even the artist?
No.
Yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt, but
sure.
I would just say that this movie, and you make a great point that it is might not be for everyone. You can't go into this like when you see a movie like Into Great Silence. You don't go into that movie, which is a documentary, expecting a narrative in it. If you do, you're going to be very disappointed. If you go into The Tree of Life expecting a conventional narrative, you'll be disappointed. What it is a tone poem from a great artist. I really, to be quite honest with you, and I've seen it a couple times now, might be one of the greatest films I've ever seen. It probably for a number of reasons. And Jim makes some good points, but to me, it is so profoundly ambitious. It's the masterpiece of a great director. Who and it's funny, the actors are not secondary at all, but you don't really think about
it.
This is a movie, this is a meditation. This movie is meditation on what it is to be alive in the cosmos. And in that sense, it is deeply religious, and I think it's a profound work of art. I think Jim makes a great point that there might have been some editing that could have been done, and yet it's so ambitious and I think so bold. And it's just in a completely different league. It's not in. It should hands down win every award in my book. It won't win, I don't think, because I think it's challenging to many people.
It might. I think they like Terrence Malick. I mean, I think he's very well respected.
Well, the fact it was included in this list tells you something, because I'm sure a lot of people saw it and said, what?
I also thought, to your point, I think that, you know, I remember thinking this is like being inside somebody's prayer, you know.
Yeah.
And in that sense, the fact that it was very discursive, you know, and it went from thing to thing, and it was like, you know, what happens when you're praying. I mean, your mind goes from place to place.
Yeah.
But I do think that it could have been trimmed just a little bit. I thought that the weakest parts were the parts with Sean Penn, who I generally like. I think if it had just been a meditation on sort of childhood,
memory.
Family, memory, exactly, creation, nature. I mean, no one does, let me tell you, no one does nature like Terrence Malick. I mean, you know, and the way he used music, and, you know, I think he used the Moldau, you know, which is like this beautiful theme, seeing sort of streams and grass, and it's very much like the end of The New World, which is just these beautiful nature pictures. It's gorgeous, and I think you're right, it is in a different league, but it's something different. It's more like a poem or a symphony, or it's different, and I think people need to go in there expecting that they're not going to see the normal. You know, it's not The Help. Nothing against The Help, but it's not a narrative.
No, it's not a movie for everyone. And I really mean that. So I think it's up there with, you know, in the great. And I think it needs to be a contender as somebody that's trying. I mean, I saw Steven Soderbergh recently said he's going to retire from filmmaking for a while. And one of the things he said is, well, when I watched something about The Tree of Life, he's like, I think it basically kicked his butt saying, I need to go back.
Well, it reminded me a lot. You know what reminded me when you're talking? It reminded me of 2001 Space Odyssey.
Okay.
This sort of like a lot of Kubrick stuff and dreamy and poetic.
Well, it's like Proustian. It's like remembrance of things past. You know, this is, again, it sounds really pompous. And I just thought it was.
That's too highbrow for this podcast.
Oh, yeah, right.
What?
Yeah, no one knows who Proust is.
Again, I just can't recommend it enough. But again, it might not be for everybody. I will say the one critique on it beyond potentially, if you want to say the editing, which I you could be discussed on that, is it's probably the worst named great movie I've ever. I just don't like the name.
I don't either. And I mean, I.
But how do you? You could have called it Genesis, and that probably would have been better.
Which would have been beautiful, or just Tree of Life doesn't make sense to me either. I mean, I know there are. It's about life. It's creation. There are trees in the movie, but it's.
Jessica Chastain to me was a complete, to use a very movie sort of reviewer, it was a complete revelation. And those kids in the movie.
Those kids were great.
And Brad Pitt as well. I mean, it was a memory of growing up in Texas that everybody could relate to.
It was almost like, I mean, it was like living in a dream, you know, or like having a dream of your childhood that you remember. It was so vivid. And there's something about the I think the lighting and the music that he uses that does it in a way that other movies seemingly can't. Yeah, he has that golden hour. He always films things, you know, right before the sunset.
He does not use a lot of lighting, right?
And I think for Badlands, he filmed all the scenes, I think, at the quote-unquote golden hour, right when the sun is kind of orange. And yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Days of Heaven, I think he did that.
Okay.
It's fascinating. So when you watch a lot of his stuff, it's naturally lit, and there's something dreamy about it. A lot of the stuff is in dusk, dawn.
Yeah.
It's quite affecting.
Right. Anyway, we can't recommend this enough, but it will not be for everybody. I know people that have walked out of it, to be honest with you.
Yo, there's movie theaters put up signs saying, we'll not refund your money for
that's
this.
Right. That's
you have to
ringing,
go and
ringing endorsement.
I've never heard it compared to prayer, but I think that's a beautiful way of talking about it. And I thought Integrate Silence in many ways was the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of refund, I'm afraid that none of us have seen War Horse. So
let's talk about it anyway.
My mom told me she saw it right around Christmas, and she thought it was too violent. So, and I've heard other people
towards
say
the
too
horses
violent?
Or towards the human beings.
It's an adult. I thought it was
World War One. I think.
Yeah, but it's not a children's movie then, right?
No, I think she just doesn't like violent movies.
Okay.
If mom's listening to this, she can clarify for herself on the website.
Let's wrap up by looking at either a film or performance you think got neglected this year. I think we've done this in the past. Jim, Bill, you mentioned one documentary that you thought was wonderful, the Bill Cunningham New York.
Bill Cunningham's New York. I was told by a friend of mine to see it. He said it was the most Catholic movie he'd seen in a while. Bill Cunningham is he's technically the
fashion
on the
photographer.
Street.
Yeah, it's
on the
times,
street,
yeah.
But it's not the.
He does it every week. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's an on-the-street column, which is basically fashion on the street. Mm-hmm. So it's not high-end. And then he does the society photographer. So on its face, I was like, I would have zero interest in this. And to be honest, when you see the movie, this is – all I can say is that it's a documentary about a man who's 80 years old who is, I would say, a modern-day monk for the truth, the beauty of truth. And that sounds very, again, pretentious and pompous, but – he's actually a very devout Catholic who is walking the streets of New York. And at one point he says in France, when he's incredibly humble, lives on essentially a plank of wood with a little mattress on top of it.
In Carnegie Hall.
He used to live across the street.
Yeah, across the street. Just moved. And it's
rent controlled.
It was an incredibly surprising movie and very powerful. And it might not be for everybody, but I thought it was almost like a modern day monk of beauty, you know, a different modern day ascetic.
The one that I want to mention is A Dangerous Method, and specifically the performance of Viggo Mortensen as Sigmund Freud. I couldn't believe he wasn't nominated, and somebody like Jonah Hill was in the supporting actor category. But in terms of a movie about ideas, and this is all about the relationship between Freud and Jung, kind of a crucial point, you know, in the field of psychoanalysis, you know, questions whether or not they're going to focus exclusively kind of on the sexual scientific component, or whether there would be some room for spiritual and kind of a larger way to look at the human mind. And it's a fascinating story, and it's not easy to do that in kind of a, you know, to explore all these big ideas in a way that's still, I mean, it's still kind of a sexy, fun movie. So I would recommend that very highly.
Absolutely.
And those two performances, we haven't mentioned Michael Fassbender, but he's been in some good movies this year, and he plays Jung in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Shame.
He's
very dark, not for everybody, but great.
I would like to praise Meryl Streep, you know, let us now praise famous actresses. I saw The Iron Lady, not knowing, I mean, I knew she would be great. She was unbelievable. She is Margaret Thatcher.
Better than Julia Childs? Better than her Julia
You know,
Childs?
Which I love that movie. I love Julie and Julia. It is, in a sense, better. I think it's harder, I think, because Margaret Thatcher is not a naturally appealing figure.
Right.
I really was thinking, and I said this to this Jesuit friend that I saw the movie with, she is in a class by herself. She simply is extraordinary. I actually was on the set of Doubt when she was acting once, and I saw her just become, you know, the sister, Sister Aloysius or Sister James. And it's the same thing. I'd read that she had done no voice work for this. She didn't work with a voice coach. And she's uncanny. She looks like her. I mean, a lot of that's makeup, but she looks like her, she sounds like her, she becomes her.
Yeah.
Well, Bill and Father Jim, we want to thank you for joining us this year, and we'll thank give you. A shout out to Cath News, and we'll post that up there.
CathNewsUSA.com. Go check it out. I think a lot of your listeners probably would like Cath News. We aggregate the best of Catholic media.
Right. Well, check it out, and thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
See you at the movies.